I mean, honestly, I've been saying this to Brett privately all year. Clayton Kershaw, and I said it to you before the show, Mal. If Clayton Kershaw isn't Kershaw, I can pretty much pack it in. It's not going to matter if he puts up like a 3-5 the rest of the way.
Good evening, and welcome to episode 54 of Flags Fly Forever, Baseball Prospectus Fantasy Podcast. I am your host, Brett Sayer, and with me, as always, is Mike Ginella and Mauricio Rubio. How are you guys doing on this Tuesday night? It's like recording night bingo. You can all cross off your Tuesday nights on your boards at home.
I can guarantee you Saturday night is never going to get crossed off.
That's true. Yeah, also, we're never going to record this on a Saturday night.
No, that's not going to happen.
It's also actually, you know what? The only way we record this on a Saturday night is if we're all together on a Saturday night.
No, I was going to say, yeah. There's two things about it. Even for me, no. And if we're all together, there better be like alcohol involved, and maybe it'll be like Chicago, and I'll secretly get recorded.
It won't be a secret because I will tell you repeatedly that you are being recorded.
You know what occurs to me about that is I'm sitting here like, you know, so I found out before the show that I was being recorded on a private Instagram, but it occurs to me even had I known it wouldn't have made a fucking difference. And now I'm cursing on the Flags podcast, so here we are.
I just want to let you know your rendition of Pearl Jam was not inspiring in the least.
It really shouldn't be.
I can only imagine. All right. So you can read all of us at baseballperspectus.com.
There's like nowhere to go from that.
Yeah, there's nowhere to go but forward. Yes, baseballperspectus.com. Email us, flagsflyforever@baseballperspectus.com. Find us on Twitter, at Dynasty Guru, at Mike Gianella, G-I-A-N-E-L-L-A, and MRubio52. Those are our Twitter handles. Go find us, and rate and review us and stuff. So, this is the point of the podcast where, I kick it out to Mike and we talk about, expert league fab bidding. Mike, let's talk about some expert league fab bidding.
Okay. So we're going to start with the mixed leagues the way we always start. So we're going to start with labor mixed, and I think for the second week in a row, and we skipped last week, but we didn't bid on anybody, did we, Brett? I think we kind of stood on the sidelines. And, you know, some of that is we bid big on Jason Grilley, and we're under the $50 threshold, which is $100 to start with. But some of it, and this is before the news this week about a key injury on our team, is some of our team is pretty deep, and we don't really have, you know, outside of our second catcher, we really don't have any significant holes.
Yep. Yeah, it's just one of those things where we have the luxury of being a little bit more picky, and we don't have a ton of money. So it's a good combination as opposed to last year where we didn't have a ton of money and we needed a lot. So
yeah. So I think the bids have kind of quieted down. You know, I know there was a period where, you know, Addison Russell went for, you know, like 34, and Blake Swihart, and I'm kind of trying to remember the exact number because I don't have the older documents open, went for like 32. There wasn't really a big bid like that this week. I'm trying to get to the page here.
The biggest bid was on Devon DeShields.
Yeah, and he went for 13.
Yeah.
And, you know, the thing about the Shields is, you know, and I kind of mentioned this in today's, if you listen to this, it'll be, you know, yesterday or the day before, article on the Fab Review. The Shields, he's starting right now. He's stealing a lot of bases. He's kind of a good play in the sense that you're talking about a guy who is similar to someone like Anthony Goes, who we might get to a little bit later, in that he'll steal bases. I mean, the question with the Shield is when Josh Hamilton comes back, it's going to be kind of crowded there. But I think even as a backup, he can definitely provide some value in a deeper mixed format. Brett, would you agree?
Yeah, I'm a little less rosy on DeShields just because, I mean, we know he's not going anywhere because he's a Rule 5 guy, but so he'll stick on the active roster. It's just that, you know, but Hamilton coming back, Hamilton's going to play when he's healthy. And, you know, in a 15-team mixed, he's really got to there's a threshold he has to clear as a spare outfielder to be valuable with the steals, and I just don't know if he can get there. I don't know if he's quite at that point yet. In an AL only, absolutely. In a deep mixed, I think I'm still a little hesitant based on what looks like a lack of playing time in his future.
He'd have to steal, I'd say, on a 40 steal pace, in my opinion, to be deep mix worthy. And that's kind of tough. Like, it's just a tough thing to do as a backup, and particularly in this day and age when teams don't really utilize the pinch runner the way they might have, say, in the 70s or early 80s.
Yeah, and it's also very team specific too, because teams, you know, teams handle these in different ways. You have, you have sort of your prototypical guy in Jerod Dyson in Kansas City, but even Dyson's been playing a little bit more lately, and he's even struggled to keep up the stolen base pace. So, Dyson last year, I think, is sort of the best you can hope for DeShields going forward. And Dyson was 290 plate appearances on the year and stole 36 bases. And sure, if he does that, then wonderful. But I'm a little skeptical that he.
Well, the other thing too is, I mean, if you had said about Jerod Dyson last May or early May that was going to be the result, I think it would have been met with laughter, you know, or at least a very healthy amount of skepticism.
Very true.
Yeah. So. You're right. I mean, I think the bid's fine. You know, and I think some of this, if you read the free agent review that I put out, you know, every week with Keith Cromer and talk about deep mixed, I mean, the fall off is very different from a standard mix. You're talking about a very different pool of players. So I get the play here by Todd Zola, but I agree with everything you kind of said. I think, you know, Todd wrote about in the Masters Ball write-up, you know, he's just hoping that he gets the steals while I can get them. And, you know, from that standpoint, if he can get, like, you know, 8 to 10 steals, that could make a difference by the end of the year.
Yeah, and I mean, that's the thing. Josh Hamilton is no sure bet to stay healthy, and frankly, neither is Shin-Soo Choo. So it's certainly possible that DeShields could find his way into regular bats through injury, but you're relying on injury to get there, not skill level.
Yeah. So, you know, moving on, there were a couple of low-end bids on potential closers. And, you know, Brad, I'll be interested to get your thoughts on this because we had a need for a closer and, you know, we actually made a move for a closer, but not via Fab. I kind of like how I'm teasing this.
Good tease, Mike.
Mal's probably rolling his eyes because we had like 10 minutes of the podcast. But Brad Ziegler was grabbed by Mike Potherzer of Fangraphs for 12, and Sean Tolleson was grabbed by 7 by Craig Glazier of B-Sports. And I'm going to use the annoying convention that everybody on social media hates. Brett, talk to me about Brad Ziegler and Sean Tolleson and, you know, why we didn't bid on those guys and why we just kind of, you know, hung back and didn't even put like a nominal bid on either reliever who could get some saves in the short term.
Yeah, I mean, for my money, I'm fairly confident that Nathalie Feliz and Addison Reed will get the most saves going forward from right now in these respective bullpens. So while Ziegler and Tolleson could end up with, you know, 3 to 5 saves in the near term, I mean, we're not in, if we had, you know, $80 or $90 fab dollars at this point, then I think we would have put some bids on here. But and in the position that we're at, I don't think it's a good move. I certainly understand it from other teams' perspectives. So I'm just talking about it from mine, from ours. You know, we have Grilly, we have Ramos, so we have two, you know, sort of bottom 10-ish closers right now. You know, it's also, you know, it's the other side of the argument is that, you know, by picking up one of these guys, we're going to put them in our lineup. There's no guarantee that either one of them is going to get saves, and we kind of need to hold serve in starting pitching as well. So it has to be worth it for us to put another reliever into our lineup, and at the expense of the starting pitching that we have, and this just wasn't it for me. What about you?
I mean, I kind of had the exact same thinking. I mean, some of it too is that, to me, if you're going to take a reliever, like I look at Addison Reed, and it seems the way they're handling this, and you never know. You know, they haven't banished him to the back end of the bullpen. He got a win on Monday, you know, in extra innings. It's not like he's disappeared. I think the plan with Reed is to try to get him back in there, you know, get him a little more confident, get him more work. You know, honestly, I thought at the beginning of the year he should have went on a rehab assignment or on the DL because his shoulder wasn't quite right. And Feliz is sort of the same thing. I think that, you know, the Rangers really are invested in him. And, you know, the thing about Tolleson is, you know, Keyota Kela is the guy who I think if they were going to make a move would be the guy that they'd probably, you know, try to stick in there for the long term. So, yeah, absolutely. I both of these pitchers are guys that will pick up some saves. But with the, what do we have, like 43 left? I just don't really, you know, think blowing, you know, say 15 on Ziegler if that's what we had bid, or a third of our budget to get him, you know, to get 5 to 7 saves is really worth it. And the thing too, you know, we picked up AJ Ramos for two a couple weeks ago, and he's a closer, and we talked about this, you know, via text, Brett. I think Ramos is going to stick. So sometimes the opportunity with a closer in waiting is on the cheap bid.
Absolutely. And you know, I'm with you. I like the dollar speculation on Kela better than the $7 speculation on Tolleson if we're going that route. But you know, Kela is a guy who could be a really good reliever in time, and he's got a 2.55 ERA this year, and he's gotten some strikeouts, but he's put way too many guys on base. I don't think it's realistic to throw him into a closer's role now, and I also don't see the Rangers doing that with him. Also, because I don't see the point of putting him in the role before he's ready, because it's just going to get him more expensive in arbitration. And the Rangers don't need to conserve dollars like some other franchises, but it just seems unnecessary at this point to do it. You know, he's got about a 1.5 WHIP. It's not like he's being, you know, 2014 Ken Giles dominant and Neftali Feliz just sucks. You know, you could say that they've been pitching somewhat comparably, but Kel's just gotten a little bit luckier.
I don't really see a pitcher in that bullpen, and you hit the nail on the head. Like, there's some bullpens, and Ramos in Florida is a good example. He to me has kind of earned it, you know, for Cishek in terms of performance. The Rangers bullpen is just a mess, and I understand why they pulled Feliz, but there isn't a performance imperative to use anyone else there.
Yeah,
I always forget that Brad Ziegler still pitches in Major League Baseball.
It is hard to remember sometimes.
I feel like he retired 3 years ago.
It's still not impossible that he hasn't.
Is there anyone else here on the mixed list? And I'm assuming you guys have this in front of you that you want to talk about in terms of the bids. You know, they're the only other bid besides the guys we mentioned over five was Yunel Escobar for $9. He went to Steve Garner of USA Today, who at the moment is kicking our collective asses, is in first place, to replace John Segura, who went on the DL. And I think that's a sensible bid, but there's really not much to, you know, kind of say about it. Escobar is what he is. I really don't. There isn't anyone here who jumps out at me as particularly worthy of a prolonged conversation. But Brad, if you see anybody here you want to talk about, certainly feel free.
No, I thought it was interesting that and maybe it's a shortstop thing, but I thought it was interesting that Escobar got a winning bid three times higher than Danny Espinosa. Espinosa's been deceivingly good lately, and it doesn't quite look like Anthony Rendon's coming back anytime soon. So he's one of those guys I'd rather bet on him continuing to get the playing time. And he's taken a little bit of a step forward in contact rate, which is a big deal for him, than assuming that Escobar is going to continue hitting 350 or whatever he's hitting. But they're both pretty good short term plays. I mean, Escobar is also hitting directly in front of Bryce Harper these days, which should bode well for his fantasy value. But the one guy who I want to just talk about maybe for like 20 seconds is Corey Spangenberg, the Padres. Let's face it, Jed Jerko sucks. Will Middlebrook sucks. I don't think either of them are going to be playing regularly against right-handed pitching for much of the rest of the season. Spangenberg has enough talent in real baseball to stick in sort of the large half of the large part of the platoon there at either second or third base, and he's got enough stolen base potential to be appealing for fantasy owners. I mean, you could turn around and he could have 25 stolen bases by the end of the season, and it won't be an empty 25 either, because he's got a little bit of pop too, and can hit for can hit for average. People forget, he was a little bit of a reach, but he was the 10th overall pick in the draft back in 2011, right? It was 2011.
Yeah, yeah, it's 2011.
Yeah. And there's talent there, and it's something that I would feel somewhat comfortable betting on at this point, given his competition there.
Yeah, Jed Jerko, we all like him, and people kind of ooh and ah about the power potential, but he hasn't done it for a while now. And the thing about the Padres is they're on a competitive footing, and we see this with the other up and comers in the National League and the Mets and the Cubs. They're doing things that they weren't doing in the past. I mean, they're making an effort to try to win this year and push for the division or the wild card. I think realistically, the wild card for all three of those teams. But who knows? So that changes the conversation. This isn't a team that's like going to win 75 games and is like, well, let's give Jed Jerko another full year to realize his potential. The guy who's performing is the guy who's going to play.
Exactly.
And really quick, are you guys buying the Drew Stubbs dream? A quick yes or no?
No.
No, although I do think that, as lucky as he was last year, he's been really unlucky this year. And if Corey Dickerson does hit the DL, and I know Brett, I think have him in Tout Wars X.
Yeah, he's on the DL. It's a bad scene.
Well, he is on the DL now. Okay. Yeah, I had a busy real life day today, and I missed that. But yeah, if Stubbs is he has the potential, and the Rockies had an imbalanced schedule in April, and they had some rainouts in May. There's some juice there, but he's not going to do what he did last year. I think in deep mix, he's still kind of fringy.
Cool.
Yep. Let's move to the Tout Wars nationally, just because we're gonna our other topic tonight. I think we can talk about what I was teasing a little bit with what we did in labor, Brett. If that's okay.
Do you want to talk about it now or after we do the NL and the AL? I'm
saying after we do the NL and the AL, because I think it segues into our other topic quite nicely.
Yep, good plan. I like it.
Okay, so in the NL. Fairly quiet, although there were a couple of interesting victory bids. And I actually had a commenter today ask me what the hell I was talking about with why do you have one price and a second price. So I'm going to add a clarification to the article about victory, which is great because that article is already 2,500 to 3,000 words a week. And, it doesn't take me any time to do that. So anyway.
Yeah.
There were two big bids that were brought down by Vickery, and one of them was Todd Cunningham, who went to G. McCaffrey of Wise Guy Baseball. He bid 27, but he got him for 7. And, you know, I think that's okay. You know, Cunningham, it's a situation with the Braves that have a lot of injuries. They've got some holes. I don't know if you guys were watching, but Cunningham basically made a play tonight where he pretty much, like, fell over his feet in left field trying to throw a ball home. But he's got a little bit of pop. He's got some speed. You know, this is an NL only, not a mixed. I think he's fine at that price. And then the other guy was A.J. Cole, who Ryan Walton bid 56 on him, and that was dialed all the way down to 6 by the next highest bid. So those were the two big bids that were kind of brought back by Vickery. I don't know if you have any thoughts on either of those players. You know, I think we've talked about Cole a little bit before. You know, he's probably the guy more worth talking about than Cunningham, who I think is just a low-level back end, even an NL only, like fourth or fifth outfielder. So A.J. Cole, do we think he can be more than a number four starter in, you know, reality, or is that pretty much what we're looking at?
I think that's pretty much what we're looking at. I'm curious to get Mao's thoughts here, but I guess the one question that I'll pose before I kick it out to Mao is, if you could choose either one right now, would you take A.J. Cole or Tanner Roark for the rest of the season?
Rest of season, I'm leaning Roark, just because I feel like I have a known commodity there. Whereas with A.J. Cole, it's well, I'll get into it, but it kind of oscillates a little bit there.
Fair enough. So, Mao, talk a little bit about Cole. Just what his strengths and weaknesses are, because he's kind of an interesting guy in that I think I sometimes find it hard to remember whether he's too well known given his skill set or whether he's not well known enough given his skill set.
Well, he kind of straddles that line, right? Like he's got the big fastball that works a little bit better lower in the velocity band. He's a fastball changeup guy, so it's kind of it's a little difficult to really appreciate that type of skill set for, you know, a lot of the casual fan, I think. But you know, the slider's there a little bit. I don't know how much bat missing ability he has in the bat. So, you know, when you're talking about in terms of fantasy, whether or not he's going to be a four starter for the rest of the way, I think that that's what you're writing, and that might be the best case scenario. You know, the upside, you know, he can be a mid-rotation guy, or he can be like an SP3 if he hits the absolute peak, but I think that when you're looking at it this year, if you get a string of solid performances out of him, I think that's a plus, and that's kind of a bonus. And I would probably still give the edge to Roark, just kind of based on what A.J. Cole can do for you in a fantasy setting. He's not the best fantasy starter. Let's just put it that way. Like I said, he's very much fastball changeup, and that's not too conducive to bat missing ability.
Sounds good. So, Mike, anyone else you want to talk about your addition?
Do I have to? Well,
be proud. Stand up and be proud, Mike.
I'm gonna actually put a blanket over. You can't see me here. I'm gonna put a blanket over my head and not be proud. I bid 2 on Jeremy Hellickson. It was knocked down to 1 because nobody else had the, you know, either the cojones or the stupidity to bid on him, depending on your perspective. But I had a bad week in terms of losing starters. Travis Wood got demoted to the bullpen. Doug Fister went on the DL. And yeah, I know this is like really the saddest. This is the old Amanda like or queen for a day thing where you win the refrigerator, but you're still sad for the women. But basically, you guys, you know what I'm talking about, but it doesn't matter. So basically, yeah, that's like a reference from the 50s, which predates even me, which, and I'll mention him because you guys mentioned Montina, which Yancey Eaton kind of teased me about this morning on Twitter. I kind of looked at Hellickson, and he, as bad as he is, he's still playable in NL only. He's still like a 4 or 5. He had a favorable matchup coming into tonight against Miami, which kind of played out the way I thought it would, you know, 5 base runners in 6 innings, 4 strikeouts, 2 runs on a Stanton bomb. I just got to hope his next start against the Cubs is, you know, passable, which I think it can be. I think Hellickson's a guy who can kind of play to a 4-4-2, in NL only with the staff I have, and you know, assuming Kershaw is Kershaw, that's really the thing that, you know, I'm looking for.
Yeah.
I mean, honestly, I've been saying this to Brett privately all year. If Clayton Kershaw, and I said it to you before the show, Mal, if Clayton Kershaw isn't Kershaw, and, you know, I'm pretty sure he will be, I think we all are, I can pretty much pack it in. It's not going to matter if he puts up like a 3-5 the rest of the way. But if you're going to go to Vegas and place a bet, you're not going to bet on that. You're still going to bet on Clayton Kershaw being something close to vintage Kershaw, even if it's him putting up like a 2-3 the rest of the way.
I agree. I'm curious as to whether you gave any, because I know we had talked about actually someone in the middle of last week. I was wondering if you were going to put a bid on him. He was actually taken by someone else for the same price, and that's Justin Nicolino. The back of the rotation in Miami is a bit of a mess, and now Jared Cozart's on the DL. Did you give any serious consideration to bidding on him instead of Hellickson?
I did not, in part because, again, given the need and given that I was down to four starters, one of the things that killed me last year in Tout Wars, and one of the mistakes I made was that I had, you remember, you were there, you know, hours after it happened. I picked Josh Johnson. He gets hurt, like, as we're at the bar at Foley's, and I carried four starters for, like, probably a month and a half. It's just a hard thing to do when teams are carrying six because you fall in the in strikeouts. And right now in strikeouts, Tristan Cockcroft and Derek Carr are way ahead, but I can jump up pretty easily and gain like 3 points in strikeouts if I keep five starters. If I go down to four, I can lose 4 points pretty easily. So I can't really get too cute with carrying a dead spot for a full week. So I thought about it, but it's kind of hard to... You know, the tout rules, if you pick up a guy like that, you have to kind of carry the zeros for a week. It's just a tough thing for me to do right now.
That's absolutely fair. Hellickson started out pretty well for your team so far. So far, so good.
Yeah,
is he in line for this win?
I believe he is because I think Dunn gave up two runs in the... He left tie, but I think Dunn gave up two runs in the seventh. Yeah. Oh, actually, no, those runs are in the eighth, so it's Hudson's in line for the win.
God, I that kills me sometimes. Just
wins are stupid. We know that.
Yeah.
You know what? Wins are kind of like if pitcher wins are like playing blackjack as opposed to poker. I see people at the blackjack table get mad because somebody puts a bet. You know, they hit on a, you know, they hit on a 14 against a dealer's six showing, and they get a seven, and it screws up the table. you can't get mad. You have to be like, you know what?
It just goes like that. Yeah, you're absolutely right. I mean, it's. I mean, I like quality starts now, and those are kind of the leagues that I'm rotating over towards. But you know, in the leagues where wins are there, like you're right. You can't get mad at that. It's just funny sometimes. I guess I'll put it that way.
Yeah. So all right. So let's move on to the American League real quick, and then we'll jump into our next conversation. Do you have anything to say about Tommy Field or Mike Wright?
Who, me? I mean, you know, I think Field's kind of one of those players, and I said this today. He's, you know, he's one of those guys nobody ever regards, but he's like that Eckstein Punto type where in an AL only he could put up $10 of value if he gets to play, and I don't really see why Odor is necessarily going to be called up very quickly. So he could be a back end third middle infielder in AL only, and that's really all he needs to be. I think he could be, you know, better than what people are expecting, but it's still not going to be much. Who else did you ask about? Joe Kelly?
Yeah, I just want to point out it's very small sample. I'm with you on guys like Field in AL only leagues, but Odor is hitting .318, .464, .818 in his seven games since he's been sent down. So I do disagree a little bit that he. I don't think he's going to be down for long. I think he'll be back within the next 2 weeks. I think he'll be back. I think they'll throw him back in there. I think they want him to succeed. I think they want to get as hard of a look at him this year as possible because they know, well, at least you don't know, you hope, but you think Jurickson Profar is going to be healthy in 2016. And I think they're going to want to know what they have in Odor right now before they start that competition.
It's, I mean, it's possible. I just, Odor, you know, from what I saw, you know, he just looked, I don't want to say a mess, that's overstating it, but he just didn't look good. He just looked like he needed some time to kind of, I agree with you, but I think there's a balance between that and making sure that he's at a certain level.
Yeah, you can have talent and still look overmatched. Like I lean towards Brett's side here, but I think that that's a very real thing.
Yeah. Mike Wright, do you think he gets another start?
I think he gets one more start.
Yeah. That's good.
You're very excited about that, Mike.
Well, I mean, you know, I look at some of these bids, and it's just kind of surprising, you know, to see him go for 14, you know, and then the next highest bid 13.
Yeah, that was – I figured McCullers would go for more than Wright, but who knows?
Hey, man. That's how it goes sometimes, I guess.
That is. So let's transition back to our team and talk about what we did yesterday. So Mike, you were running point on our negotiations here. So why don't you discuss the trade that we made and why we made it?
Well, you know, we've kind of, you know, as is the tradition for us in labor, we had no success with our closers in the draft. This year, I think the one good thing is we took them later. We took Jenry Mejia, who, you know, I don't even know what happened to him at this point. I think he was hurt and then he got suspended? Was it the order of operations?
Yeah, he was hurt and then suspended.
Yeah, and
he was hurt warming up for his first appearance.
And then, you know, we took Pat Neshek on the Astros, who we knew was a long shot, and, you know, the closers there have been fine. But, you know, we made the aggressive bid on Jason Grilley once Craig Kimbrel was traded. We made, as I mentioned before, the sneaky bid on A.J. Ramos. So basically we were up to two closers and kind of wanted to strike while the iron was hot. We have a pretty deep offense, although that's kind of, you know, we got hurt a little bit by the Will Myers injury, which we found out about hours, or the DL situation, hours after we made this trade. So I negotiated with the wonderfully named Keith Hernandez of KFFL.com, not the Keith Hernandez who played for the Mets. I'm sure that Keith has heard all – the KFFL Keith has heard all of the jokes, if you're listening.
Well, we also don't know whether former first baseman Keith Hernandez has heard all of the KFFL Keith Hernandez jokes.
Oh God, I'm yeah, I don't even know where to. I don't even know where to go with that dude. In any event, after and I think this will segue into the second and final topic quite nicely. After a very smooth negotiation, we dealt Anthony Goes, who's pretty much been on our bench all year. Do we have him up for a week?
No. Oh, no, wait, we did. We did the second week of the season, I think.
Yeah, so we had him up for a week. And, yeah, when Denard Spann was out, and I think we had some other things going on, for Luke Gregerson of the Astros. So now we're carrying three closers, and it's a little bit different in a 15-team mixed. But basically, it's kind of a question of three closers. I think we still are tied with the most closers with everyone in the league, and it gives us a chance, looking at the standings, to move up 4 or 5 points pretty quickly, which we're in a good position in labor. We're, as I'm, you know, talking to you right now, we're in second place or third place, about 9 points out of first. But there's a couple categories where, you know, we really need to move, and that's one of them.
Yeah, it definitely is. And, you know, we have a little bit of a, you know, obviously we lost our ace, so to speak, you know, about a month ago now, but we've had some pretty strong, We've had some pretty strong guys to throw out there at the front of our rotation regardless. And the strength of those guys, I think, is going to allow us to hold serve a little bit more there while we carry three closers, rather than if we had a weaker starting pitching staff. I mean, having Arrieta, Cole, and DeGrom really helps our ability to carry those guys.
Yeah, I would agree.
Yeah, those three will really make having closers pretty easy.
So this trade gives us an interesting transition into what's going to kind of be our last topic of the day, and that's talking about the value of closers in trade as the season goes along. And Mike, we talked about this offline a little bit, but I want to kick this out to you just to kind of explain sort of how you value closers in a league like this, or in a shallower or deeper league, and how that changes from the time of the draft to now, and why, and where sort of we go from here.
Well, you know, it's funny that you mentioned that, and this kind of, I believe this conversation, this topic stems from negotiations that we had with another owner in labor that kind of started with what I think, regardless of whether you're talking about a closer or any other position, is the kind of thing I just kind of shut down and don't want to talk about. So this owner, you know, we started talking about closers and we made an offer. And his response was, well, I drafted this closer in this round, and this player you're trying to trade to me is in a lower round, so he's clearly not worth it. So, you know, basically, that just doesn't make any sense to me. There's a lot of players that move up and down in value as things go along. You know, Albert Pujols, for example, I'm not going to give him away, but, you know, we took him in, what, the fourth round, Brett? If somebody came to me with a player I thought was comparably valued who was taken in the seventh or eighth round, I'd make the trade. Now, I think with closers, there's an additional complexity because basically the category, and I think this is what you're getting at, Brett, the category shifts significantly. And I'll start with mixed leagues. Now, in mixed leagues, there's more opportunities to pick guys up. There's more opportunities, I think, for trade. There's more situations where you can go from one to three or two to four closers in a hurry and gain a lot of ground. But there's still some teams at the bottom that just kind of give up on the category after a little while or you know, reach a threshold and say, you know what, for me to get from like 3 to 6 points in the category and blow through all my fab or blow through my high priority waiver claims, you know, just isn't worth it. And I think some owners don't really see that. I think they look at it as, well, a closer can earn this much and be a top earner, but this is where the valuation theory, which I always talk about, I'm a big proponent of, versus the reality is always different. And, you know, Brett, I don't know if you agree or if you understand what I'm getting at, but basically at some point, even though a closer can theoretically earn 30 to 35, if you can only gain 2 points by trading for a closer, and most of the teams in the league can only gain 2 points by trading for a closer, it, you know, it just doesn't really make sense to make that fair market deal.
Yeah, I mean, you're essentially dealing with a closed system inside a closed system. So you're, you know, all the movement in saves category tends to happen in the middle of the category. You have your teams that either drafted three closers or ended up with three closers that will, you know, get out ahead. They're teams that you know, have had bad luck in the category that will fall behind, and then everything in the middle is usually up for grabs. But, you know, this is really the time of year when you have to start thinking categorically. It's not quite time to act categorically. I think that time is still about another month and a half away. But for a trade, I mean, for a trade like we did, and for a trade like I think we're talking about, it makes the most amount of sense to try to deal from a point of strength for a mid-range closer if you're looking to not fall too far behind in saves. I mean, the last thing you want to do is give up an integral piece of your team in order to acquire a good closer that, you know, will probably just not help as much as you think they will.
Yeah, and I think this is kind of like leads into a broader problem with trading. I think some owners kind of see this value in a vacuum, and I think some of this is the expert mentality too. When you have owners in six or seven leagues or more, they don't take the time they should to, you know, and Mal, I'm sure even as a fantasy player in a couple leagues, you've seen this too, where you get an offer and, you know, somebody looks at your, you know, you're like, wait a minute, why is this guy offering me power when I'm like at the top in power and asking for speed when I have no speed? And it's like, oh, it's because he didn't even look at my roster. He's just looking at his team and trying to like make it great. And you get kind of irritated, but after a while you get over it. You're like, well, whatever. I mean, that's just the way some people are. So, you know, I basically think that that's some of it too. People aren't really looking at things categorically. They're looking things across a broad value spectrum. And that, you know, that's a mistake. And it's, you know, for people listening, that's a mistake even experts make. I try not to make it. And it's something I'm actually kind of pretty good at, which is, you know, kind of making those calculations on the fly and be like, okay, well, if, and we did it in last year in labor, you know, we decided to give up on saves rather than, you know, beat a dead horse and be like, all right, well, we've got like six categories to run after. Let's run after saves. And, you know, I think that's the other side of the coin. There's teams at the bottom or near the bottom of the standings right now. You know, one of the reasons I think Keith, and I think Ghost for Gregerson was a fair deal, but one of the reasons I think negotiations with Keith went so smoothly, I think he's looking at where his team is in the standings. You know, he's in fifth place right now, but his offense is really in poor shape except for in batting average. You know, he's toward the bottom, middle of the pack, toward the bottom, you know, closer to the bottom in runs batted in, last in home runs, near the bottom in runs and stolen bases. I mean, you know, it's just kind of there is the imperative here, and we saw this last year in our position, there is the imperative here to kind of make a move. And thankfully, we're not in that position where, you know, we're going to stand everybody on the podcast talking about labor and how our team is sucking, because we're doing pretty well, and I think our team is solid. But if you are in that position, you want to kind of throw the Hail Mary, as we talked about last year, and go for it. And saves is an easy place to make that adjustment. And it's why the market for saves gets devalued.
Yeah, and it's also important to note the you know, the sort of the one category guys versus the multi-category guys at this point. I think if you're dealing with offensive players that aren't sort of one trick ponies and dealing with starting pitchers, then judging based on value is still perfectly appropriate at this point and is for a little bit longer. I mean, you have, you know, you're not going to, you know, trading a guy who's going to contribute in three categories for a guy who's going to contribute in three categories. We're still in such a small sample that you don't know quite where you kind of know where your team's going to be in the standings at this point in some of the categories based on, you know, whether some guys are taking steps forward, some injuries, but you don't know nearly as well. Whereas in steals and saves, you have a much better idea. So the, you know, the same argument that you make for saves is for you make for steals as well.
Yeah, any category that's not really tied to anything else. I mean, steals, well, I mean, you can say it for saves too, because a high-end closer is tied to ERA and WHIP. You know, and same for steals, I think a guy can be tied to runs and possibly batting average. But yeah, it's if there's a trade that you can make where you're just giving up one category and you're helping yourself elsewhere, I think you have to go do that again, particularly if you're middle of the pack and or toward the bottom, without a doubt.
Yeah, and you know, we're getting back to the previous point. The whole dealing based on preseason value is something that, you know, needs to be thought about a little bit more, because if that's the way you are focusing on trades 6 to 8 weeks into the season, then you're going to have a hard time finding trade partners. And the trade partners you find, it's unlikely that you're going to make a positive deal if that's a strong indicator of what you're looking for. And it's just a good reminder. I mean, a guy who was a fifth round draft pick is no better than a guy who was a ninth round draft pick on merit alone on May 15th. That just doesn't exist anymore. Those rounds or dollar values disappear as soon as you leave the draft room. It all changes, and hanging on to it is not a particularly good look.
No, absolutely
is that,
not.
Is that a fantasy football thing? Because I've heard that a lot from the fantasy football guys.
I don't know about Brett. You're asking the wrong person. I haven't played fantasy football in a million years.
Gotcha. Yeah, I think it might be a little bit of that. I think it might be a little bit of that mentality creeping its way in, but you know, and it's even more. I'm terrible at fantasy football. I don't particularly enjoy it. So I'm certainly not the best person to opine on fantasy football, but it would seem to be an even dumber thing to do in fantasy football. But it's the simplicity of it that I think drags people down, because it's an easy thing to point to when you feel like you shouldn't do something, and the easier something is to point to, the more people will point to it. So you know, it's human nature more than I think it's fantasy football, but I don't think the fantasy football aspect helps.
I think, you know, in a broader sense, yeah, the fantasy football mentality does impact, you know, baseball in general. And, you know, I've kind of talked about this before. It leads to some bad decisions, and it leads to, you know, also I guess you'd call it a mixed league mentality. You know, I was in an NL mock draft where people were kind of taking upside picks as early as the 10th round. You know, in NL only or really deep leagues, your goal is to just pack stats onto your team. So, you know, you can take your risks like way at the end.
Yeah. So with that, I think we'll wrap up this episode and take a quick break, and then we'll come back and close up shop. Welcome back, and thank you for listening to episode 54 of Flags Fly Forever. We have been a Baseball Prospectus fantasy podcast. I have been your host, Brett Sayer, and you've been listening to Mike Gianella and Mauricio Rubio. Come read all of us. Subscribe today at baseballprospectus.com. Get a premium membership. Get access to all of our wonderful content from a fantasy prospect and general baseball perspective. It's really excellent, and I say that as someone who enjoys reading it now just as much as I did, 8 to 10 years ago. Sign up for a super premium membership and get access to all of that, plus the Bat Signal, which is our fantasy answering service. Ask us a question, get an answer within about 12 hours, and be all the happier for it. And if you are into daily fantasy, or if you just like making money, play in the BP Daily Fantasy game at DraftKings. You can find out all the information about that by pretty much following any of us on Twitter. We have gotten in a good habit of talking about it and making fun of each other for our terrible finishes. With that, we will see you next week. Write us, flagsflyforever@baseballprospectus.com, with any questions, have a good week. Bye-bye.
Bye.